Support for this public radio podcast comes from Bose, offering Bose in-ear headphones designed for comfort and quality sound and featuring soft silicone tips in three sizes at bose.com/radio.
This is Jeff Horwich, the host of In the Loop. Tonight, because of the Thanksgiving holiday, we're bringing back our very first episode of this current fall season. It's a thoughtful and, as it turned out, a very funny hour on our modern digital world called Your Exposed Life. We're getting ready right now to tape our final three shows of the season, and it's not too late for you to join our audience. You can get free tickets for this Thursday night and the two following Thursdays just by signing up at minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. Get involved. Help us build this new kind of radio. Take a minute right now to visit us online. And enjoy the show. You know, there's some stuff I'd really rather you didn't know about me, if I had any choice in the matter. I once felt very strongly about Huey Lewis in the News. Enough, in fact, to review some of their albums at great length on Amazon.com. 1 year, I bought Christmas gifts for every member of my family at the As Seen on TV store in the Mall of America. And I can fit an entire harmonica inside my mouth, or at least I could when I was a freshman in college. Apparently it helped if I had my shirt off. Well, thanks to my college buddy Aaron for preserving that glorious picture of me on his website. I'm Jeff Horwich. This is In the Loop. All that stuff, that's me. You know, it's not really the version of me that I would choose to put out there if I were applying for a job or a loan or a date. Not that I'm applying for a date, honey. But these elements of my identity are out there for the world to see, digitally preserved, online, pretty much, probably, forever. Today's In the Loop is about our newly exposed lives, this transparent world we live in now thanks to Google, YouTube, Facebook, and all these other places that serve up selective glimpses of who we are. On one hand, these digital trails bring a newfound power to us, not just to the usual suspects like marketers and the government, but to every one of us with an internet connection. Maybe we'll use this power for good.
I got in touch with my best friend from high school who I hadn't talked to in about 15 years. Got in touch with me via MySpace.
Maybe we'll use it for evil.
I have a friend who's around my age and she never tells her age. So I Googled her and I found out what her age was.
You Google the boss that you hate and something came up about him that he had been disbarred by the state. And it was truly none of my business.
Of course. You know, these digital trails can be far from empowering when we find ourselves on the other side.
Somebody had the temerity to give me a bad review. I wish I could excise it, but I can't.
Anytime you hit, you Google John Sherman, you're going to get the senator who did the Sherman Antitrust Act. So I compete with a dead U.S. senator.
I don't know. You lose that wonderful option of being able to determine who you are. The internet determines it for you.
The implications of all this range from irritating, of course, to devastating, possibly. People can lose jobs or friends over their internet image. In the next hour, we're going to talk with people who are sweating this new world, and we'll talk with people who find it liberating and wonderful. We'll explore a modern phenomenon known as the Google Ganger, and one of our producers has been out learning how to take as much control as she can over the story the web tells about her. It's all part of this episode we're calling Your Exposed Life. Along the way, we'll get help from our house band here, the Smarts, as well as this fabulous and eminently Googleable audience that we have here at Minnesota Public Radio. Whether you're with us by radio, MP3 player, in person, or listening on that gosh darned internet, thank you all for joining us in the loop. Now to get started, we need two unsuspecting good sports from our audience here. Let's get you up here. Mary Delery and Ryan Flanders. Mary and Ryan, come on down here. You're going to help us illustrate tonight's point with a game that we're calling This Is Your Exposed Life.
Welcome to This Is Your Exposed Life, where everything you've ever said or done on the internet comes back to bite you in the butt for the amusement of other people. This Is Your Exposed Life is brought to you by Yahoo! Next time you Google someone, try Yahoo. And by the Cayman Islands, helping people create new identities since 1962. Now, here's your host, Jeff Horwich.
Thank you very much, Joe. Mary and Ryan, we're going to take a little digital trip down memory lane, revisit some of the online crumbs you've left for us to get to know you both a little bit.
No. Hansel and Gretel.
You both ready to play?
You betcha.
All right. Ryan, you work with computers for a living, right?
I do.
Tell us what you do.
I'm kind of a one-man geek squad.
And Mary, what do you do for a living?
I work for a nonprofit in St. Paul that promotes study abroad programs for undergraduate students.
Very nice. Well, let's learn a little more about you, shall we? Mary, do you remember who said this?
I knew New York was big and grand, but I never knew it was this big.
I hope that wasn't me, but I don't.
Mary, 10 years ago, you were a fresh-faced college freshman at Sarah Lawrence College. Before classes started, you joined 8 other students and a professor to run as fast as you could through Manhattan from landmark to landmark.
That's
wouldn't you
right.
know it?
Yeah. I forgot about that, but I do have a t-shirt.
And wouldn't you know it, you landed yourself not one, but 2 quotes in the New York Times. Let's hear it all.
This is brilliant, gushed Mary DeLory, a first-year student from Annandale, Minnesota, somewhere between the Metropolitan Museum of Art and the Guggenheim. Oh, I thought New Yorkers would be really stuffy and into their own things, but everyone is just happy and smiling. I feel kind of rude running through everyone. But they all say, oh, we'll get out of the way just for you.
Now, evidently, Mary, you're quite a runner. You placed 493rd in the 1998 Park City Ford Great Pumpkin Classic. Running 4 miles in 34 minutes and 54 seconds. Very nice work. Ryan.
Oh, boy.
You are also a runner.
Ryan Flanders had the best 1,600-meter time of his life at the Melrose meet. Running a 4:42, he took second place.
I'm sorry, Ryan. You know, we looked all over the place. We couldn't find any reference of you coming in first.
That's true.
But at least you weren't 493rd like Mary over there.
Well, there you go.
Ryan, do you recognize this?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's Michael Mannering. I love
That's
this
right.
guy.
Mere months ago, you reviewed Michael Mannering's CD, The Book of Flame, on Amazon.com, calling him, quote, the most innovative, original, creative musician to ever blow my mind.
That's right.
Let's hear the rest of your review here, with special emphasis on the words you put in all capital letters.
This stuff is astoundingly different. It's not for everybody. If you need something to glom onto, like catchy pop lyrics, this may not be for you. However, if you have a wild imagination, you'll love this. I would describe this music as being highly visual. Because it's abstract, your brain fills in the details with vivid imagery. Michael Mannering is a genius, unlike you've ever heard before. The guy is a machine.
So you kind of like this Michael Mannering guy, huh?
I love him.
He's not.
I have a man crush on him.
Oh.
Add that to your online repertoire, would you? All right, back to you now, Mary. Mary, do you recognize this?
Hi, Mary. You're a Virgo from Minneapolis.
Does that ring a bell?
Must be MySpace.
Very good. That is the voice of Tom, the founder of MySpace, and your one and only MySpace friend. Serving up the only information you have on your neglected MySpace page. Ryan, we actually do know quite a bit about your tastes. What's the Couchsurfing project?
Everybody in the Couchsurfing network offers their couch up to anybody else. You can crash on their couch. And this is done worldwide. You can go to Hong Kong through the Couchsurfing website and stay on somebody's couch for free in Hong Kong. It's pretty cool.
That's a pretty neat idea. And yeah. You actually offer up a lot of personal information. Wow. To entice people to stay on your couch, I guess.
Of course.
It's actually a pretty good way to get to know you. You got your life philosophies up there, Ryan.
Life is what you make of it. Now, that may sound trite, but if you give it some thought,
It really becomes profound.
I need to think it over just for a minute here. It's a, yeah. You get, of course, travel advice up there. You've been, I think it says, to 8 different countries now.
Well, if you're viewing a country through the tinted windows of a tour bus, you're just wasting your time and your money. And a cell phone is more important than underwear, especially if you're traveling alone.
Now, I don't know what that means, Ryan, but you seem like a very nice young man and certainly well-traveled. But then click through to your page of photos. Now, there's one standout in there, Ryan. Do you know what I'm talking about? Evidently, Ryan, you didn't forget your underwear on this trip because you're wearing it on your head, throwing back a big green bottle of Rolling Rock.
That's great. That's great.
Ryan, what do you say? All right, Ryan will cop to it. We could go on and on with you two, but I think they've had quite enough.
Oh,
Mary Delery and Ryan Flanders, thanks for playing along with this.
This
is your Exposed Life. Thanks again to Mary and Ryan for humoring us and allowing us to dig into their online resume, whatever you call that. I don't know. Susan Fuller and Gary Grooms were our actors for that segment, as well as our bass player, Joe Weissman, with his announcer chops there at the beginning. In some ways, you know, you really are what Google says you are. Anyone can throw your name into a search engine, potential employers, potential dates, anybody, and they think they know you, even if you've never met. Some people embrace their internet presence. Other people, like our producer, Julie Seipel, kind of wish they could disappear. And Julie is here with us, of course.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Julie. You want to disappear? What's the deal?
Yeah, so I don't Facebook, I don't MySpace, and I really don't understand these people who post these videos of themselves singing karaoke or blurt out their latest crush on their blogs. Oh. Honestly, I'm kind of afraid of the internet. Mm. If I had my way, Google wouldn't know anything about me.
Yeah, so how's that working out for you?
Yeah, that's not going so well. If you search my name, you'll find the time for my latest 10K run. It wasn't very fast.
Oh.
You'll also find this college survey I filled out once that nobody told me was going to end up online. You'll see that I spent my undergrad Saturday nights at the library, and now I go to bed at 10 p.m.
Exciting. Nice.
So basically, my internet self is slow and lame.
Well, that's not the you that I know at all.
I know, so I kept talking to people about, you know, is there anything you can do to change your online image? And somebody told me about this guy, Terry Steindl. So I found him driving around in Ramsey, Minnesota, and basically having lived my nightmare.
Oh, it called me the most retarded real estate agent in the world.
One day he was just doing his job selling houses, and a blogger made fun of a flyer he'd stuffed in mailboxes around town.
They just slammed it, and then they said, "Would you buy a piece of real estate from this agent?"
And there it sat, a nasty blog entry. Whenever he searched his name, it was right at the top of Google returns. Then one day on the radio, he heard about a company that helps manage your online reputation. These experts who get paid to make you look better on the web.
I can at least fight back, or not even fight back, but at least say my piece, tell people who I am.
It actually started to help his online image. And Terry thought, maybe someone could help me too. So I found David Erickson. He's a web marketing guru. He helps companies and people look good online. Before I walked in the door, he'd already Googled me.
I know the grants that you got. I know where you've traveled. I know where you've studied. I know what jobs you've had. I know where you live.
David didn't mention my bedtime or 10K speed. Maybe they're like a zit on my forehead. I think everybody's staring at it, but nobody's even noticing. So I pointed them out.
Go down a couple of links there.
All right.
So it's a survey I filled out for a college reunion once.
Okay.
And I don't love some of what it says, like the second answer there.
What are you doing now that you never thought you would? Going to bed at 10 p.m.?
Yeah, so I kind of want to get rid of that.
Yeah, you can try and do that. It's probably not going to happen.
Some companies will help you scrub your web image. Pay them and they'll convince Google or webmasters to take things down. But sometimes the people who run the pages just won't do it. And anyway, David says you can't ever be sure something is gone forever.
The way browsers work is when you go to a web page, they download all the elements of that web page in particular. They download it to your computer. So this could be conceivably thousands or millions of computers on which that document is stored.
Great. Even more disturbing, there's something called the Wayback Machine, where you can find websites the way they looked 10 years ago. So David says I have to stop thinking about erasing embarrassing pages and concentrate on burying them. He's got this whole slew of tricks.
Buy your own domain name, .com yourself, juliesaple.com. Put up a web page about you. Open up accounts in MySpace and Facebook and all the social accounts, Flickr, and put your name as the account name, as the username, so that those things show up in the search results.
So basically, if you don't like the picture Google paints of you now, paint a bigger one, a mural. Flood the internet with your own stuff. Then get people to link to it to push it to the top of search engine lists. David says only like 20% of people click to page 2 of Google. So do everything you can to get the bad stuff off page 1.
You have to. It's it's a new world, folks.
I get it. But I kind of hate the idea. Splashing my life all over the internet feels sort of tacky. And it seems like it would give me less, not more, control. The more I put out there, the more it can be used against me. But isn't there any way people can just stay off the internet?
Well, not exist. So if that's not an option for you, then basically just keep your name offline in any content that you produce.
So how hard is it to do that?
It's practically impossible.
I could quit my job and stay off the internet, or I can grit my teeth and log into the messy, unpredictable future. That's what Terry the real estate agent did.
And I've had hits from Amsterdam, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Half a century old, and he entered the digital world. He built himself a website and started a blog of his own. Now, if you Google him, his own pages come up first.
So what do you think I should do?
Take control. I feel a lot better knowing that I have got a place to go where I can say what I feel needs to be said.
So what do you think, Julie? Are you going to take the leap?
Yeah, I'm still not sure I can do it. But earlier this week, I did buy my own domain name.
Really?
Just in case.
So we can all look forward to juliesaple.com.
We can.
Coming soon. Julie Seiple, thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
So Julie is nervous about putting herself out there on the internet. I think most of us probably would be. Let's bring up two people who have run in the opposite direction, who've embraced this idea of putting lots of themselves out there online. I'm going to start with Andrew Beekler. Andrew, you're 19 years old, right?
That's correct.
Thanks for being here. You go to Concordia here in St. Paul.
I do.
Now, your main outlet, as far as we could find, is a blog that you do on MySpace.
That's correct.
So what's your philosophy about what you will and won't put online?
Well, I really like to put myself out there online. I think it's really important to be honest, especially in this community where we try and hide everything from everybody.
Now, you've been going through some relationship problems recently?
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's my big thing.
Well, not to belabor, the game show concept too long, but Jimmy, keyboard player, can we get a little bit sort of, lovelorn, heartbroken music? Very nice. Our drummer, Morris Engel, is going to read a short passage from the blog of Andrew Beekler.
Go for it.
I really, really need to stop looking at her MySpace. I took the first step of deleting her from my friends list, but I find myself visiting her page from time to time. Is this going to be another Kelsey? Have I become so infatuated once again? Maybe she still has that mix CD I made for her. No, she probably threw it away. The rose has withered and the petals have fallen, just like I wish the memories would, but they don't.
No, they don't. No.
Andrew, you held your head high for the most part while that was read.
Yep.
Does it bother you?
Not at all. Not at all. I mean, what being read in front of a lot of people here, it's, it puts in perspective that I whine a lot. and I guess, especially with that, it's this John Cusack, say anything, high fidelity mentality that I'm kind of going through right now. And I think that's, again, important. That's what stage I'm at in my life. I'm having relationship troubles, I'm stuck on that. And that's who I am right now.
Now, also with me right now, we have Michelle Campbell, or Madame Campbell, right? To the students in your high school French classes. Michelle, you've got a blog that is, I'd say by blogging standards, it's pretty popular.
Pretty popular, yeah.
You get a pretty good following, a lot of comments on the blog. A
lot of comments. I have about 100 readers a day most days.
That's actually pretty remarkable. You blog a lot about relationships too, right?
What kind I of have. A big part of the posting that I did was on the topic of my master's thesis, which was a memoir about my former partner who was an alcoholic. And it was really important for me to have the space to get all of that writing first draft stuff out into an audience's hands because I needed feedback about what I was saying and what I was writing, and I got that. But then one of my students said, Madame, why don't we talk about drunks today instead of talking about the Little Prince?
Ouch.
And I said, well, actually, there is a chapter about drunks in the Little Prince, but that's not for another three chapters, and we're going to talk after class.
So you knew right away what he was talking about?
Absolutely. So I started just changing immediately what I was writing. I was a lot less personal. I was a lot less... I was writing about a lot fewer things that were happening in my current life and more about things that had happened in my past.
Do you feel like you're losing something, turning off that spigot or just at least turning it down a little bit?
You know, I'm not entirely sure that I want to stop blogging altogether, but I do censor myself a lot because I don't think that it's appropriate for the kids to see certain sides of me in my profession.
So I'm going to ask the audience directly now, what are your boundaries? I mean, where do you draw the line? What will you and won't you put up? Anybody else feel like Andrew? That, yes.
I'm Tara from Minneapolis. I'm on a roller derby league, and I'm also on the board. And so I used to be really free in what I would blog about and just be very honest. And now I find myself not being able to talk about certain things because there's certain board confidential things or certain things that I can't say. If skaters found out, they would call into question my... just my position. So I've found that I am kind of under a gag order now, and I want to just rant and be crazy about all the stuff that I could be as a skater, but I can't because now I'm in more of a position of authority and can't do that.
Anybody else been through what? Yeah, sure, Ryan.
You know, you had me up there earlier for the Expose the Digital Life thing. I think what's interesting is I'm very conscious of that, and I intentionally do not have a Facebook page. However, I'm still on Facebook because... my friends who take pictures of themselves with me, you know, will post those pictures. So I am still on Facebook. And that goes for anybody any members of the audience, too. If you have friends with a Facebook page, your picture is up there, and people know exactly where you are or where you aren't and what company you're keeping and what you're doing, even if you don't have a Facebook page. I think that's interesting.
Anybody think maybe kids, young people, have a totally different perspective on this? I mean, is this really a generational thing, that there's something they sense that they like, they enjoy about putting themselves out there? And what is that? Yeah, let's go back to Michelle.
Well, since all of my students ask me if I have a Facebook page, and it's not MySpace anymore. It's Facebook. MySpace was so 2 years ago. Honestly. And they tell me that it's really crucial for them to know what's going on because everybody else is doing it. And if you don't stay linked in, then you're just not, you can't compete. You can't socially compete.
You think just about everybody, Andrew, going back to you, you think just about everybody your age gets this, feels this in a different way than even people who, like me, are maybe 10 years older?
Well, I think this is a personal perspective on it. In this world where it's so big and we get so lost sometimes, that when you can find somebody from Australia, you can find somebody from Las Vegas, Nevada, and they relate to you, it makes the world a little bit smaller and makes you realize that you're not alone, no matter what.
Well, Andrew Beekler and Michelle Campbell, thanks both of you for coming and sharing your stories with us. I'm going to switch gears here just a little bit. Some people have a name that is so unique, it's very easy to peg them in an internet search. Most of us share our online identity with at least a few people who have the same name. I do. You can call these people Google gangers. That's a term that's come to represent this phenomenon. As more and more of our identity goes up online, and we depend more and more on that identity to convey who we are, this whole Google ganger thing, I think, could get to be kind of a big deal. It sure did for this guy.
My name is Robert Fisher. I'm an IT consultant, and don't you dare call me Bobby. In case anyone doesn't actually know, Bobby Fischer is arguably one of the greatest chess minds that has ever walked the earth. But I am not him. I actually was in a chess tournament once upon a time, and only once upon a time, I lost every game, and every time the person paraded around the fact that they managed to beat Bobby Fischer at chess. So I don't play that anymore. I'm a technical guy, and in the IT field, there is a lot of expectation that you're doing something out on the internet. What Google says about you is in many ways your credentials. In my case, my problem was that I was way at the bottom of the list. I was 4 or 5 pages down on Google, and so no one could ever actually find information about me. All they found was information about Bobby Fischer, the chess player. I'm trying to get recognized on the internet. First, I went out and I put my full name, Robert Fischer, out on every networking site that I could, and I started blogging a whole lot under my full name. Finally, I've managed to get up to the point where I think I'm like 6th or 7th hit down. You get my blog, and then shortly thereafter, you get my personal profile. Unfortunately, I have not beat out Bobby Fischer, the chess champion, and I don't know if I'm ever going to. I suppose there is a bit of irony here. After all, Bobby Fischer's busy hiding off in some Scandinavian country, I'm forgetting exactly which. The fact that I can't manage to beat out a hiding guy does say something kind of sad about my presence. If I could send a message out to Bobby Fischer, I would probably say, hey, it's awesome that you are that good at chess. It would be really, really awesome if you would just let me sneak a little bit higher on those Google postings.
Well, maybe you spotted Robert, don't call me Bobby Fischer, the other day in Newsweek, actually, lamenting his un-Googleableness. Newsweek actually spotted him after he responded to a post on our In the Loop weblog, which is called The Loophole. Keep an eye on that blog. The producers and I are posting there almost every day. You can find it at minnesotapublicradio.org, along with a podcast of our show. The blog is one way that we hook up with interesting people and collaborators for our program, In the Loop. I am Jeff Horwich, and thanks for listening to us this evening. The idea of collaboration is central to what we do on this program, and the best way to get involved with us is to get involved with what we call our Public Insight Network. This is our network of people who hear about upcoming topics, get back to us with their ideas and experiences. You're hearing a number of them on the show tonight. If you want to get in on that, you can go to minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop. Now, for most of us, the idea of really having our lives exposed online is still in the future. Fortunately, there are some guinea pigs, people who can show us what it's like when the internet really gets a hold of you. Cautionary tales that may say something about what we're all facing at some point. It's almost like the internet itself is trying to send us a message. And I think it might go a little something like this.
You know, I can sure be a blessing. I can raise you up to such heights. But I'll just as soon burn you and just as fast turn to a curse. Well, I can bestow you such fame. I can make the whole world know your name. But that's a part of the curse. I'll catch you at your worst, and your life will never be the same. Well, I'll raise you up, and I'll tear you down. Your David Hasselhoff, sticking drunk your shirt off, eating cheeseburgers off the ground. You're the grape stomp lady, the Numa Numa guy. Just ask the Star Wars kid, the video don't lie. Miss Teen South Carolina maybe wasn't too bright. She had a very simple question and a lot of stage fright. Now she's famous for a speech no one could understand. U.S. Americans everywhere like such as and. Nobody could tell what she was trying to say, but it was all across the internet the very next day. Now wherever she goes, it is a big wide world. She'll always be the laughingstock of YouTube girls. Well, I'll tear you down. I'll make a grown man cry. Yeah, John Edwards fixing his hair, you know I'll be there when Kramer lets the N-word fly. Watch again and again when Britney's off her game. know a Google search for Larry Craig will never be the same. Alec Baldwin had a message for his daughter, and it just couldn't wait. You ungrateful little pig, I'm flying in. I'm gonna set you straight. Well, maybe you weren't destined to be father of the year, but now your parenting skills are out there for the world to hear. Yeah, sweet Vanessa Hudgens was America's hun. Disney's High School Musical is wholesome fun, but a picture hit the net. I suppose you could say now she's a role model in a different way. I'll make your life hell if you give me a chance, like if you drink too much and if you don't wear pants. Girls behaving badly is a favorite of mine, and if you got a sex tape, it's just a matter of time. Make a one misstep and I'll tear you down. Yeah, it's on your permanent record if I catch you getting naked and someone's got a camera around. It's a whole new world, yeah, when everything you do, talking to you, macaca, yeah, one false move could always follow you. One more time, come on. One false move could always follow you.
Thank you very much. That's the Smarts, our band here on In the Loop, backing me up there. Joe Weissman on bass, Morris Engel on drums, Jimmy Kennedy on keys. Now, sometimes your online image can actually be more flattering than your real life image. Our friend Lucy Amundsen has had this experience. Now, we here at In the Loop first met Lucy at one of our story slams. That's a version of our show where we invite people, anybody, to come on out for kind of a storytelling open mic. Watch our website, minnesotapublicradio.org/intheloop, for information on the next story slam. Lucy is with me on stage now, an alum of the story slam. Thanks for being here, Lucy.
Oh, thank you very kindly.
Now, I guess you've been feeling a little bit conflicted about your Google results.
Well, Jeff, sometimes things are just better than they appear. Throw my name into Google, and you'll believe that I'm an authority on home, yard, and garden care. See, I'm a freelance writer, and I wrote this story called First Aid for Your Lawn, Remedies for Your Hurtin' Turf. Then it snowballed. Magazines that previously wouldn't reply to my story ideas were now phoning me. And before I knew it, I'm writing a trail of do-it-yourself articles for a national magazine. 1.2 million readers are learning how to bend rebar into a garden trellis, build a closet organizer out of a sheet and a half of oak veneer plywood, and throw that perfect cornrows from me. Online, I come off as some great fix-it guru with the flair of Martha Stewart, but I prefer to think of myself more of a Carrie Bradshaw a la Sex and the City. We're both wavy hair writers, have predominant noses, and write about ball cocks and screws. Though I'm plainly more PBS, less HBO. But here's the cold truth. Despite my stories on lavatory faucet repair and do-it-yourself mosaic tile planters, I'm not all that handy, or crafty, or even a good cook. If it weren't for an army of behind-the-scene experts coaching me along, there'd be no articles. In fact, and I hate to admit this, I had a leaky shower for the better part of a year. And we're not talking some slow trickler either. This gusher was contributing to a dinosaur-sized carbon footprint threatening to crush us all. Finally, my husband paid someone to fix it. So while my online status feels disingenuous, it's also entirely heady and fun. I get to go to photo shoots, prop shopping, but if I were in danger of becoming smug from any of this, there'd always be my real life to bring me down to size. I'm a mostly stay-at-home parent, or as I like to say, a surface wiper. Nose, mouth, bottom, high chair, counter, repeat. And it's a damn humbling job. There's been some true lows, like the difficult period when my infant child stopped gaining weight. First, her height and weight percentiles flatlined, then dip, and then she fell off the graph altogether. And it got worse. Our baby was diagnosed with a condition called
failure to thrive. Failure to thrive. How can I not feel bad about this? It has the word failure right in it. The situation bottomed out when medical professionals suggested I was actually starving my child on purpose. I started to write about it just to cope. I poured it all into a piece called Your Mama's a Failure and You Ain't Thrivin'. It lived on my computer hard drive for a long time. A few years, actually. I wasn't ready to roll that whole suspected of child abuse thing into my image online or off. But friends convinced me it was a story to be shared. I sent it to some editors, threw it on my website, and it got picked up by a few blogs and magazines. And that's when the emails started. They're time-stamped the dead of night from parents going through the same stuff. And while I can't fix their problems, they seem relieved to connect with someone who has walked through this same dark tunnel and emerged on the other side, humor intact. They don't care if I can make a centerpiece out of shucked corn leaves or whether or not I fix my own shower. They're struggling surface wipers like me, and our connection is a potent one. So, if sharing my genuinely imperfect self online becomes a shiny glint of something for those panning the online data stream late night looking for answers, then I guess I'm willing to take the Google hit for it.
Lucy Amundson.
Last night, find out if you were all right. Figured after this much time, what's the harm, hey, what's the crime? Found your wedding invitation with the parking information. He looks like a nice guy, assuming he's the one in the tie. Your Flickr photos too, and that thing up on YouTube. Hard to believe that it's you. You look great, and motherhood seems to suit you.
Yeah, I just wanted to see what you've been up to, yo. Thought maybe in the end you couldn't let me go. Though inside my mind your memory persisted in your online trail. It's like I never existed. Yeah, just like I never existed.
I just wanted to see who you became beyond me, and to get caught up again, peek inside your life and see what might have been.
Just wanted to see what you've been up to, yo.
Came rushing back, and each hit became a smack. Is it voyeurism, this pathetic way to reminisce?
Thought maybe you might have a blog about me. Evidently your life is just fine without me. It's a pretty good way to find out how things are. Yo, it beats staking out your neighborhood in my car. Yeah. Sure beats staking out your neighborhood in my car.
I googled you last night, bittersweet nostalgia flight, and the hardest thing to see is what it told me about me.
I just wanted to see what you've been up to, yo, yo, yo. Though inside my mind your memory persisted in your online trail, it's like I never existed.
Thanks, guys. You can learn more about the Smarts at thesmartsband.com. You're listening to Your Exposed Life, the latest episode, loopisode, we've been calling them around the office, of In the Loop. I'm Jeff Horwich.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, this is Chicago Jeff Horwich.
That's me.
Okay. glad to finally have a chance to talk with you for a couple of minutes. So why don't you give me just the quick breakdown? What are your sort of vital statistics?
I'm 50. I'm a commodities broker. I live in Buffalo Grove, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago.
Jeff, have you ever done a Google search on yourself?
Yeah.
And what do you find?
You.
Should I apologize for that?
No, that's okay. That's all right. You know, I did find something in myself. I think I sing in a choir, and I've sung for some professionals' background stuff, and I think I found myself in some of that stuff. And I was a competitive tennis player once upon a time, and I think there might have been some articles from way back when. But otherwise, you were front and center there.
Well, so what's your reaction to see that the activities, accomplishments, whatever, of your many years are kind of, just by the nature of what I do for a living, kind of swamped by that?
Yeah, you know, I understand it. It doesn't do much for me one way or the other, because I know that presentation is what the Internet's all about. As a matter of fact, I think I prefer to not be front and center.
Well, now tell me about that. What's the kind of cautionary tale that leads you to think that you might rather not be able to be so easily found?
Identity theft, even when I was telling a friend of mine about this thing that you're doing, he was like, well, you know, make sure there's no identity theft going on. And I said, no, I already Googled him 3 years ago and saw that he's for real. So, you know.
Seems like a scam, sure.
Right. I'm not a paranoid person, but it's more just not being available for anybody to search out for whatever reason.
I mean, I found you by sort of tunneling through some, not even current versions, but like cached, archived versions of your synagogue's newsletter.
Right, exactly.
These sort of shadows of things you've done. Now, one reference that I did find, something about you opening for Barbara Streisand in Las Vegas. What is that about?
I don't know about Barbara Streisand. No, well, I opened for Noah, who's a woman, and it wasn't in Las Vegas, it was in Chicago. There may have been a joke going around. We have a very small Reconstructionist Jewish synagogue, and about 7 years ago, my wife said, you know, they're looking for some male voices in the temple choir. You've got a nice voice. Why don't you go try out? And so ever since then, I've been singing, and I've loved it. And it's just like there's Christian rock, there's also a Jewish, quote-unquote Jewish rock. So I've been having fun with it, and I do, you know, weddings and bar mitzvahs, but I sing mostly for my synagogue during high holiday services.
So the other Jeff Horwich is a Jewish rock singer.
Exactly, and it's a wide-open field, so I'm going right to the top of the chart. There's no competition.
Wow. Now, Jeff, that's the kind of thing that I would want to know about you if I were searching for you online.
Yeah, I suppose so. I suppose if I was headlining some show somewhere or something, then maybe that would show up. But I really love singing, and I love being on stage. As much as I was telling you about my not wanting to be front and center on the Internet, I'm a big ham by nature, so.
Well, we've got that in common.
Oh, good. Well, I figured you must be if you're, doing what you're doing.
Must be something in a name, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, Chicago Jeff Horwich, it's been very nice to talk with you.
Okay, you too, Jeff. Good luck to you.
Absolutely. I suppose it'll be no trouble for you to keep up with what I'm doing, but I'll keep trying to dig deep and find out what's going on with you.
No, that's fine. Listen, anything you find that I don't know about, like opening for Barbara Streisand, please let me know.
That's my very own Google ganger, Jeff Horwich from Chicago. And California, Jeff Horwich, I know you're out there. I'm coming for you. Now, a few minutes ago, the smarts got us thinking about the other side of this thing we're talking about tonight. Who's doing the Googling of us? In their case, creepy ex-boyfriends, a subject with which I guess they're somewhat familiar. And everybody these days knows that you're practically negligent if you don't look someone up before a first date. But who else is sniffing out our online trails? Well, employers, for one. We have someone here who's on the other side of that transaction in a way, but who's very familiar with just how much job candidates do get Googled and otherwise searched on the Internet. Stephen Rothberg is the president of CollegeRecruiter.com. Thanks for being here, Stephen.
Thank you.
Now, CollegeRecruiter.com is devoted to helping college students and recent grads kind of find that first job, first internship. And Steve, seriously, companies are doing this, right?
Absolutely. About 75% of the employers that I talk to informally that aren't going to be on the radio show will admit to it.
What all are they searching to learn about people?
They're searching for risque photos, but they're doing it for work reasons.
And why do you think they don't want to cop to it at this point?
When you're trying to recruit college students, the last thing you want to do is build a reputation on campus as being big brotherish. If the college students think that you're searching their Facebook pages and looking for photos of them vomiting at some party last weekend and then dinging them in the application process, they're going to just trash your reputation on campus. So you're not going to find the best candidates if they think you're doing that.
We all want to work for a place that doesn't care if we vomit at parties on weekends, right?
We all did in college.
All right. Well, speak for yourself, Stephen.
Because I was wild and crazy.
Have you ever seen any people who have really been bitten by what a prospective employer found out about them online?
Yeah, absolutely. A good friend of mine was just about to hire a young woman who had awesome internships, awesome grades. Everything just lined up perfectly about her. She went through the interviewing process and met with probably a dozen people at the company, and they just were beside themselves about how wonderful she was. And then at the very last point, he Googled her, found a MySpace page, and Ashley's MySpace page went on and on and on about how she likes to get drunk and have sex with strangers. So he called her in and asked her, is this your page? And she said, yeah.
Morally, what do you think? Was it okay for the employer to...
To me, that's so far over the line that it just demonstrates...
What
she did. Okay. It just demonstrates a lack of judgment.
Stephen, thank you, and stay with us. I want to talk to the other person who's joined us up here, Terry Bly. And Terry, you're going to take us into a realm that I think is even more morally gray, where you're a practicing psychotherapist.
Correct.
And for a while, you were the therapist on campus at Hamline University here mm-hmm. in St. Paul. So you know a little bit about how much people, young people in particular, are putting out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, my first thought is, what an amazing research tool for a psychotherapist, right?
Yes and no. I mean, sure, it would be. The most important thing in a relationship with a client is the relationship. And if you're doing something that's going to harm the relationship, that's the number one no-no in our code of ethics. You don't do harm. When I was thinking about Googling patients, I had one that I really wanted to look something up because I wasn't really sure if I believed something she was telling me.
Sure.
And I thought, well, I could just Google and find out. And then I stopped and thought, well, what if I find out she is lying? What do I do with that? Because I could tell her, I Googled you and I found this isn't true. And then you find out your shrinks Googled you. And, you know, and that's going to feel weird. It's feel like your therapist is like spying on you. And then how does that affect the trust relationship? Well, if I don't tell her, it's still going to affect the therapy relationship because now I know she's lying to me. And I'm finding out something about her before she trusts me enough to tell me. So.
Well, you've certainly alluded to the temptation that's there.
I've done it once.
Really?
I did it once.
What happened?
It's really tempting, and I did do it once. And I didn't feel good about it, but I did it. It was somebody, and I thought maybe he was delusional. And so I'm going to justify it by saying that I was trying to find out if he was psychotic and I needed to have him committed. But I don't know if that's...
That seems pretty important.
Well, he was kind of weird.
Sure.
And so weird
really?
And psychotic.
He sounds like a straight-up guy to me.
So I did Google him because he kept talking about these awards he was winning, and I didn't believe him, and so I Googled him. I didn't find him winning any awards.
Did you use that?
I did. I did use it, but again, it feels like murky. Not wrong. It felt murky, like I was treading into an area I wasn't so sure I would want to repeat very often.
But of course, times may change, I suppose, as years go by. It sounds like it's a debate.
Right.
People are weighing these
things.
Well,
I don't really want my patients Googling me for that matter.
But there's no ethical problem with that, I suppose.
I know. So I don't have public blogs and, you know, pictures of me on my spring vacation in my bikini or anything because, again, who wants to see their shrink like that?
Yeah, I suppose not. Maybe doctors of all types, you just don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably, or bosses for that matter. Right, Stephen?
Definitely not.
I wonder who else might be doing this? We can bring the house lights up here in the UBS forum. We'll get the audience in on this conversation. Anybody else wondered about it? Anybody else been in a situation where Googling is useful?
Hi, I'm Ken. I grew up in Philadelphia. I'd be concerned about the amount of misinformation that's spread online. I'm an interactive designer, and just from a visual standpoint, the amount of software, photo software that can manipulate pictures, and the kinds of pranks that people can play, it's a very dangerous thing to be taken as gospel, whatever you find on a Google search.
Very true. Before we go to another hand here, I want to ask Stephen what you think about that. Legally, has this come up?
Well, I don't think that you can hold an employer responsible for a reasonable belief that the photo's there. I mean, if the employer knew that the photo was bogus or had good reason to know it, then I think that employer is going to be in some trouble. The story I was saying earlier about Ashley with the, you know, sex and having, or getting drunk and having sex, I think thankfully my friend asked her to, is this you? Because he didn't assume that it was her. It could have been an ex-boyfriend who had a grudge against her, who made up this page and made her look like she had a real lack of judgment. There is a real issue with using Facebook as opposed to MySpace. Facebook is password protected, and MySpace is not. So MySpace is kind of open to the world, and Facebook is not. If you use somebody else's login to look at, you know, a candidate's page, then you've got some potential serious legal issues there because you're hacking.
Does anybody think that this might be a great way to get a new sense of somebody you might be hiring? That there's a positive side to this? Yes, right here.
I think I might be the...
Just give your name and where you're from.
I'm Mary Jane from Minneapolis. And I seem to be a minority here. In law enforcement, we use Google all the time. And I don't know why you wouldn't make information available to yourself.
How has all that information changed your job? Has it made it easier or harder in the end?
Yeah, it at least gives you additional tools to check out, whereas maybe before you would hit dead end. So,
can you give me an example of where you can remember this came into play?
You're looking for an address. You're trying to find someone who's moved, and you find where they've moved to because it is Googleable. So,
very easy to find that kind of stuff now. Thank you very much for that perspective. Thanks to everybody here in our audience at Minnesota Public Radio and the UBS Forum for joining in the conversation. Thank you also to Stephen Rothberg and Terry Bly. You're listening to In the Loop on Minnesota Public Radio, and I'm Jeff Horwich. Remember what teachers used to say about all the bad things we did?
Jeffrey Horwich, this will go down on your permanent record.
Now, once we got to sixth grade, you know, everybody knew there was no such thing as a permanent record. Except now, we grow up, and what do you know? In the meantime, they invented a permanent record. And nobody told us this record was going to be public, too. What we're talking about here, I think, is distinct from issues of information privacy. I mean, that's about information that's been stolen or obtained in some sneaky way. This is about a new level of public information about us, legitimately and easily available to anybody who comes looking for it. There's usually, you know, no right or wrong about it. In professional cases, certainly, there are some lines that we'll all be learning about as the years go ahead, but personally, we look each other up all the time. This information is just there. So, the question is, how well are we actually adapting to our increasingly exposed online lives? This question matters the most for young people. They're the ones who don't have jobs yet, and they'd presumably at some point like to land a mate later in life. They're also the ones putting the most potential bombshells out there. Ben Fransky is a good authority on this. Ben's a listener of ours who happens to teach technology ethics to undergrads at the University of Minnesota. And frankly, he's a little bit worried about his students' kind of cavalier attitude about what winds up on the web.
It would be nice if you could just shake them and then they suddenly realize all the important decisions that they make early in life can affect them later in life. But it's almost something that people learn best by being burned by it once or twice.
Now, Ben, of course, wishes only small internet burns on his students. Just a light toasting, maybe, to open their eyes. The best scenario is when the burn comes collectively. No one's hurt. Everyone learns. Now, we've talked about Facebook a little bit tonight, and this kind of awakening happened last year with Facebook. One day, the site started giving people an ongoing feed of every change their Facebook friends made to their pages, what they're up to, where they're living now, whether they're dating somebody. The site intended just to introduce a cool new feature, not teach a big lesson. But Ben says Facebook inadvertently confronted people with just how much they are putting out there.
People all of a sudden started saying this is a great tool for stalkers. Well, it probably always was. It's just now, because people were blasted with the information when they first logged in, they actually realized that people can see the changes that they make.
Facebook didn't actually expose any new information. It just connected the dots for people. The uproar after this was evidence, I think, of just how much we all still have to learn about what's ahead. This mix of online information, some we put out ourselves, some other people put out about us, this changes how we all relate to each other. And this, I think, is really fundamental. And it's actually beyond the power of public policy. This is personal for each and every person. The gut instinct for many people is to try to hide, but abstaining from the flow of online information really just places your online identity that much more out of your control. In a way, we're looking at a future in which we're all public figures. Think of it like that, for anybody who comes looking. As my good buddy, Chicago Jeff Horwich, said earlier in the show, the internet is all about presentation. We're all marketers of our own identity, managers of our own brand. For some people, this new reality is really exciting. For others, it's a sad, sad day in the history of humanity. We'll adapt in our own ways, but don't take it lightly. Remember, this is going on your permanent record. Every post you make, online quiz you take, every song you rate, every bad first date, I'll be watching. Every cell phone shot, every half-baked thought, every pic you share in your underwear, Ryan, I'll be watching you. Oh, can't you tell? You mark your trail so well. In your online wake, it's every post you make. Help me out here, guys.
Every post you make, every quiz you take, yep. Every song you rate, every bad first date, every cell phone shot, every half-baked thought, every pic you share in your underwear.
Well, that's our house band, The Smarts, doing their best to police impressions. Thanks to them, of course, our house band here on In the Loop from Minnesota Public Radio. You can join the network of listeners who help us build the show, subscribe to our podcast, check out the Loophole blog, get tickets for future tapings, all that stuff at minnesotapublicradio.org/InTheLoop. In the Loop is produced by Julie Seipel, Sandon Totten, and Larissa Anderson. Our interns are Bradley Campbell and Anton Fryant. Thanks to Molly Bloom, Melody Eng, and Preston Wright from Public Insight Journalism here at Minnesota Public Radio. We get multimedia help from Christina Schmidt, and our photographer is Jeremy Pavlik. Our technical director is Josh Kubasta, with engineer Maury Jensen and live producer Alan Freckman. Jim Gates is our editor. Our senior producer is Mark Brule. Production of In the Loop is supervised by Leith Bishop. Our executive producer is Michael Scholar. Thanks to all of our guests and, of course, our audience here at Minnesota Public Radio tonight. I'm Jeff Horwich. We'll see you next time in The Loop. Hello, this is Jeff again. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We've got three more before our current season is up, and we want you, no, we need you in our audience. In our next one, we're taking on a staple of modern politics with a show we're calling Flip Flop Fever. We're taping it Thursday night here at Minnesota Public Radio. Join us for this one or either of the following two Thursday nights. We provide the thought-provoking content and, by the way, some great food before the show. You provide your own stories and willingness to have a good time. And it's all free. Give it a shot. Just reserve your seats at minnesotapublicradio.org/InTheLoop.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.